Support for Sound Ideas comes from Bloomington Normal Audiology, the best hearing device center in the Pantograph Reader's Choice Awards for the sixth year in a row. Bloomington Normal Audiology thanks the listeners and their continued vote of confidence as the leaders in hearing and technology. With a practice featuring five doctors, including two who wear hearing devices themselves, BNA takes a genuine interest in each patient and helps you keep hearing the most important sounds of your life. More information at bnaudiology.com. Bloomington Normal Audiology, here for you.
You're listening to Bloomington Normal's Public Media. Illinois State University will start looking for a new president. Current president Larry Dietz says he'll retire next summer after 6 years in the job and a half century in education. He says it was a tough decision.
Absolutely. When you love what you do and you love the people that you're working with and you believe in the mission of the organization, it's always tough. But 50 years is a long time to do anything, and January the 4th, that's what it will be for me. So I think that it's time to say thank you and maybe move to the next chapter.
A month ago, we talked about your buying a house and right. that it shouldn't be viewed as any signal and that you had no immediate plans. What changed in that month?
Well, I would say it was more than a month, frankly. Really big other than more of a focus on this 50 years. It kind of hit me in the head. I will say that in the summer, at the end of the summer, I was participating in a Zoom call with 1,000 prospective students and their families. And I had done my presentation in the Q&A section. There was a person that asked the question, what have you learned from the pandemic? And that has been a question that's stuck in my head ever since that time. And, I've said, from an institutional perspective, I think we've learned a lot more about resilience and persistence. My personal reflection is to say that I've learned, I think, about perhaps being more grateful. I'm very grateful now, particularly for my health and that of my family, friends, and colleagues, and grateful for the freedoms that we've are being a little restricted now in terms of, moving around and all those kinds of things. But those are freedoms that a lot of other people in a lot of other places don't have. And perhaps as a society, we ought to commit ourselves more to being healthier and being more thankful for our freedoms. And that really started a deeper, more prayerful kind of reflection with me and with Marlene and my wife. And so we've been talking about this quite a bit. I had good conversations with the board. They've been phenomenally supportive. We talked about what might be an appropriate time, and I wanted to give them enough time to, do a search in the, in the winter and hopefully get somebody here around the 1st of July. It just began to kind of come together. But the main thing is that January the 4th is going to be 50 years, and that's a long time. And I think, we want to be able to enjoy life after work.
You had a successful capital campaign, comprehensive fundraising campaign. There have been several major gifts apart from that. The enrollment has continued, as you like to say, strong and stable under right. under your leadership. What do you think are your major accomplishments here at ISU in the last 6 years?
Well, anything that I've accomplished, I've not done it by myself. It's really taken a terrific team of folks. I do feel very proud of what our team has done, and it's a big team. It's faculty, staff, students, alums, our elected officials, all the folks that have really been helping us build the university. But we've done some curricular kinds of things in terms of the addition of several degree programs, but the expansion of cybersecurity is something that I think is really going to help the institution. We're remodeling Julian Hall now to accommodate that. A strong possibility of our engineering program and moving in that direction is going to change the institution in a very positive way. The international initiative, I think, is a very positive aspect of the institution. We're working on our diversity, equity, and inclusion agenda. We're making strides on that. We'll be opening a multicultural center, the Bone Student Center. Renovation will be finished this spring. The Wansuk Kim College of Fine Arts, with the release of funds, that project will begin in earnest. And to me, the capper of all that really is the campaign where alumni and friends have really not only voted with their feet, but they voted with their wallets and their checkbooks and credit cards. And that to me says that people really do value the investment in the institution. And I think there's nothing stronger that says strength and stability than enrollment. And our alums have helped us promote the institution. We've got a great product to promote. Our academic programs are strong. Our faculty are very talented. Staff are dedicated to service. And it's just a great place to be. So it's not really one thing. I think it's a myriad of things that I will always be proud of, and but mainly proud of the team effort in making those accomplishments.
At its root, education is about people and the connections between educators and students. How do you see education changing, if at all, over your 50 years?
Wow. I would say that access has become a higher priority. The affordability part of that has always been a challenge over those 50 years and will continue to be, in my estimation. And I think we should re-examine, how higher education is funded. We front load all of the costs in the 4 years for an undergraduate student, and some have challenges in meeting that cost up front. Though the value of an education on a financial side shows that the student that gets a degree will make over $1 million over their earning lifetime, for the investment. So, who wouldn't make that investment? But if you don't have that front money, it creates a real challenge. But I would say the other thing that has changed dramatically over the 50 years, the demography has also changed. And we have more students from underrepresented populations who are a part of higher education now. We need as a society to better support education to allow those individuals not to have some of the affordability issues that they've had. Technology has certainly changed considerably, but I think the core part of education that really hasn't changed and is our hope for the future is that it still provides opportunity, and provides that in so many ways. There's a great deal of research that talks about the impact on the individual as being, a better citizen, living longer, living healthier, being more involved in their communities with individuals with degrees. But I think it really is still a venue for opportunity for individuals.
What will the next president face in challenges?
Well, I don't think the pandemic will be, I hope, it would be a great hope and prayer that, come July 1 of next year, that is, we're in a very different place than we are right now. And I think that will be true, but it's not going to be over in my estimation. And the financial challenges that, that it's presented won't be over either.
Do you have a fondest memory or story about ISU you'd like to share?
Boy, I have so many. The fondest memories are always when people achieve their goals. And an activity, if you will, an event, a ceremony that is always my fondest are commencements. It's always seeing the smile on the faces of individuals who look at this institution and the experience that they've had here as giving them a leg up in life. And that's what higher education is meant to do. And so there's not just one, but there's thousands and thousands of them that I get to have experienced about every day in this role. And I've been privileged to do that, and it's been a real honor.
What will you miss?
To a degree, I'll miss some of the challenges because I'm inspired by some of those. But I'll miss some of that. But mainly, I'll miss the people.
ISU President Larry Dietz, thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate it, Charlie.
I'm Charlie Schlenker. This is 89.1 FM and WGLT.org. If your business is stress management, then 2020 is your year. The coronavirus, historic job loss, racial injustice, and a fiercely contested election left many Americans on edge for months. Eric Stock reports businesses that specialize in mental health and wellness are in great demand, but the pandemic has created obstacles to meet that need.
Carmen Champion owns Main Street Yoga in downtown Bloomington. Her clients come for yoga and meditation, but really, she says, they come to de-stress.
Stress is the number one reason people come to classes.
And one major source of stress is the pandemic. It has also made it harder to hold classes. Champion moved all her classes online. Even though demand may be greater, participation is down 60%. Champion says it's harder in a Zoom class to see whether your clients are using proper form and it's less intimate. Plus, people are juggling schedules to manage childcare and work adjustments and no longer have the time. And Champion says some just don't want more time in front of a screen.
Zoom exhaustion has been a big deal. It's been something that me and other studio owners have talked about. People have been on the screen all day. By the time nighttime rolls around, the last thing they want to do is turn the computer back on again and get on the screen again.
You have other places to turn for self-care, and you're not alone.
Very few people wake up every day right now saying, I feel good.
Leslie Ruchbert is a dietitian at the Corey Center in Peoria. It includes lifestyle and diet into its health programs for women. Ruchbert says more women have been calling, looking for paths to better health during the pandemic, and more men are seeking them out too.
We have had an increase of men, typically husbands of wives, who go to our office, who are now saying, it's my turn.
Ruchbert says many people have plenty of questions about how to be in better health, whether it's to protect themselves against the coronavirus or to reduce their risks if they get infected. She says many start off on a false assumption that they are healthier than they truly are.
There are people that look and we assume are healthy that are getting the virus and are having a hard time with the virus. So I think we need to spend more of our resources on really getting a better picture of what we are considering good health.
Ruchbert recommends a comprehensive health screening that may reveal underlying conditions that could leave you at greater risk. She says not knowing creates anxiety, and that creates its own health problems.
That stress that kind of builds up over time tends to be the tipping point that causes things to go bad. You know, the difference between high blood pressure and having a stroke typically is stress.
And when that anxiety gets to be too much, that's when it's time to seek counseling. Jen Bovey owns the Mental Wellness Center in Bloomington. The clinic moved to all telehealth at the start of the pandemic, and counseling visits dropped. Bovey says the clinic had to move back to in-person therapy by the summer.
In July, we had a massive increase in our need for services, and we felt like if we didn't come back into the office, we were going to lose some business because people were needing us to come back right away.
Bovey says a majority of customers felt therapy via video wasn't working for them. Bovey says in times like this, control what you can and accept that fear is real. The problem, she says, is fear often leads to greater isolation.
It should be able to bond us all together. Unfortunately, what I see a lot is like there's this whole fear factor. And if you have COVID and I haven't gotten it yet, I'm going to be afraid of you. And so I'm going to judge you very harshly because you have it and I haven't gotten it yet.
Bovey says some clients also struggle with the post-COVID syndrome. That can include neurological issues, hair loss, and other random health problems they didn't anticipate. But there are silver linings of the dark clouds the coronavirus has cast. Yoga instructor Carmen Champion says many customers have adjusted to taking classes at home.
There are students that have really struggled to practice or to explore their yoga in their house, and now they're having kind of a new appreciation in their home about how they can practice and explore and be present and peaceful in their own home. And I think that's been a really cool thing.
Champion says taking a meditation class at home has helped some incorporate it into their daily lives rather than leaving it at the studio. Champion says despite the drop in customers, she's doing fine. She has also adapted to current events. She added a class for Yoga Nidra, what's known as a yoga nap, the day after the election.
Because in the 2016 election, the Wednesday after the election, we had the results, the final results, a lot faster. And I had people walking into the studio crying all day.
Champion says the yoga nap went over well, but clients wanted it the next week too, since the election results were delayed. So she obliged. Counselor Jen Bovey also adapted, and she says her clients have too. She says the return to in-person counseling has given them a vital sense of normalcy.
I think just the familiarity of, okay, you're back in office, so that gives me some sense of safety and some stability because at least I know life is getting back to normal.
Bovey says she hopes the pandemic teaches us something about those struggling with the mental health issues, that what they need most is empathy. I'm Eric Stock.
A study done this summer showed 90% of U.S. adults reported emotional distress due to the pandemic. This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. A venerable holiday charity event has adapted itself to the current uncertain times. The Baby Folds Festival of Trees was forced to make some changes and sacrifices regarding the premier fundraising event this year. But by using a new app, they hope to still meet their goal. WGLT Arts correspondent Laura Kennedy has more.
The Baby Folds Festival of Trees is currently underway in the Twin Cities. This is the 27th year for the event, which features a wide variety of holiday decor up for auction. And in response to the pandemic, it's a hybrid event this year. That's according to Jessica Shaw, coordinator of development operations for the Baby Fold. She says the event is both online as well as in the old MC Sports location at Eastland Mall.
It's significantly smaller than the Interstate Center, but what we're really going to do this year is just highlight all of our auction items. We're going to try to have all of our auction items on display and sort of grouped by item type. So it's more of a retail experience. So we're hoping that when people come out there, they're coming out with intent of wanting to buy something that they've already seen online. So we're hoping that, and asking our guests, you know, go on the website, festivetrees.org. We have our link there to our new auction website that we're showcasing this year. Browse items, you know, watch a few, place some bids. But say you've got your eye on a 7-foot tree and you really want to see it in person. That's when we would say, you know what, come on out to Eastland Mall and just kind of size it up, see if that's really what you're looking for. So it's more of a place to view things in person after you've viewed them on the website.
Now, this is a major fundraiser for the Baby Fold. Where do the proceeds go for this fundraiser?
So they go directly into benefiting the programs that we offer to children and families in the community. So several different programs, anything from special education to foster care, community schools, preventative services. So it just gets spread evenly through all of our programs to really better the lives of children and families.
I know you must have a monetary goal in mind, but was that difficult to set since you are doing a hybrid event this year? It's something completely new.
We always want to try to get around $200,000 as our net proceeds. So I think we may hit it. We have over 500 auction items. We've had great support from our sponsors. So we're confident we'll hit that goal. And if not, if we get maybe a little bit under, we're just still glad that we could still offer something to the community this year.
Now, bidding this year is mobile-based.
Yes. So part of the creative process with trying to figure out how to offer a really unique experience this year is wanting to shop around for a new mobile bidding auction software. So we found One Cause, which is formerly BidPal, which I believe several, maybe even in our community, several organizations use that for their fundraising efforts when they do have events. So we knew it was a really good program and we're super impressed with it. And it's great because you can have photos of the items. You can put descriptions in, you can recognize your designers. It's very user-friendly, very easy to register. We've got how-tos on there. We can feature our sponsors. So we thought this would be a good alternative, not only to feature our sponsors in a new way we've never been able to before, but also offer a safe option for our guests to browse items without even leaving their home this year.
Well, let's talk about some of the items that you have up for bid. For example, people can have a Tesla
for a week?
They just reached out to us and wanted to partner with us, so we worked out a deal with them. So we're excited to see that. With that, we've got everything from gift baskets to over 37-foot trees, hundreds of wreaths, centerpieces, and other holiday decor. And we typically have several hundred items in a typical festival year. So I love the support from the designers and the community that really stepped up and thought, you know what, I'm still going to make a wreath for festival, and it all makes a difference. So we're really excited to showcase so many items this year.
I noticed you have a donut tree, something that's been decorated donut style.
Yes, that was from yours truly.
Did you?
I used to work at Denny's Donuts during my college days, so just donuts are a huge part of my life, and I thought, you know what, I need to design a Christmas tree based on my love for donuts. So yeah, we've got all different kinds of cool stuff. I mean, we've got the traditional Santa-themed trees, snowman trees. I've seen a few patriotic ones, maybe a little purples and your non-traditional festival colors. There's always something for someone out there, so this year is no different.
That's Jessica Shaw from the Baby Fold. The Festival of Trees continues through this weekend, both online and at Eastland Mall in Bloomington. I'm Laura Kennedy.
Hear more about the shift in logistics for the Festival of Trees at WGLT.org. Thanks for choosing Sound Ideas on Bloomington Normal's public media, made possible in part by Bloomington Normal Audiology. I'm Charlie Schlenker.